You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We are covering down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, listen, I am real pleased to have somebody in studio with me. First elected in 1998. I said six terms or eight terms, but he said, no, it's six. But Del Marsh, State Senator Del Marsh, who's been representing District 12 from over in the Calhoun County area, for those years, a very successful businessman, one of the architects, by the way. You heard me talk about the Republican sweep in 2010, and Dell was truly one of the architects of that Republican wave in 2010. And I believe the first Republican, maybe ever, to be voted in as the pro tem of the Alabama State Senate. But Del Marsh, we're glad you're here today. How you doing?
Great, Phil. My pleasure to be here.
Well, we're glad you're here. And listen, I think it's fair to point out, too, you spent these years, you've been a very effective member of the Senate, and we'll talk about some of that here in a minute, but you're actually, you voluntarily stepped aside from being pro tem, and you're voluntarily stepping aside from being in public office overall. You're not running again.
That's correct. Of course, as you said, I've been in for six terms, and, you know, got into politics in 98, had never been in politics, was a business, and continue to be in business today, but was frustrated as many at what I considered at the time a lack of business-conscious legislature that's not looking at what was good for Alabama and the economy going forward, and kind of threw my name in the hat. And if I knew today what I or then what I know today, I would have realized that's kind of chancy. But I was elected, and I spent my first three terms in the minority.
Yeah.
And I tell you, it's everybody needs to be in the minority to understand how it is to play defense, which we played for three terms, and
yeah,
it was interesting.
Well, it was, and I can't help but wonder, too, if your sweet wife Ginger knew what she knew now then, would she have let you run in the first place?
Yeah, and Ginger was great. I mean, all through it, as we all do, and when it came time for reelection, it was always one of the questions, well, Ginger, do we do this again? And she was always supportive, as the rest of my family was. So I had that, obviously, that benefit of having good support there. And it was an honor to serve District 12 for those six terms. And hope you and I will get a chance to talk about some of that transition that took place from going from the minority to the majority.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you, though, am I correct in saying, because a lot of folks don't remember, institutional memory gets a little vague after a few years have passed by. Republicans took the state house, we'll talk about that more in a minute, in 2010, and had a majority for the first time in 136 straight years. But am I correct that you were the first Republican pro tem ever, or at least in 136 years?
Well, since Reconstruction.
Yeah, since Reconstruction.
That's correct.
Wow. That's big doings. But, so let's talk about that for a minute. You got into office. You fought in the minority for a few years. And then in 2010, there were a bunch of neophytes, me being one of them, who thought we might run too. But you guys were already planning. Then who became Speaker of the House, Mike Hubbard, you, several others. Talk about how the architecture of the 2010 Republican takeover happened.
You know, Phil, timing is a big part of everything. And back in that time frame, if you remember, we had just been through the 2008 housing crisis. There was a lot going on, and people, I think, were unhappy with a lot of the leadership that was going on in the state of Alabama, and the Democrats had controlled it, obviously, as I said, since Reconstruction. I went through my first two terms playing defense, and it was somewhere along that second term that Mike Hubbard and I, who at that time was in the House, started discussing, you know, if you're ever really going to change this, you've got to get control. I mean, you can play defense all day long, but sooner or later, if you're going to govern, you've got to get control. So we did something that was pretty unconventional. We didn't go to lobbyists. The traditional lobbyists had been funding campaigns in the legislature for years. We put together a program where we went out and talked to individuals who had the net worth, if you will, to make a $40,000 donation. We basically, our goal was to find 100 people out there that wanted to see Alabama better, wanted to see a pro-business legislature.
Yeah.
And that's where we'd sit down and say, what would you support a pro-business legislature and to the tune of $40,000? And to when we did that, what was important, I think, at the time, both Mike and I were the first two that pledged the money. I $40,000 of my dollars, $40,000 of Mike's. And when we sat down, yeah. and we ended up getting 100 and I think six people across the state that put that money in. So we had $4 million going into that election cycle.
Had the Republican Party ever had that level of funding to do things with?
Not to my knowledge. There again, you've got to remember, it was always typically most of the monies were raised either on a smaller scale on local level or from through the lobbying community in Montgomery, which we avoided that. And you got to remember, being in the minority, a lot of those folks aren't listening to you anyway.
Yeah.
So we did this. And the other thing that was so important, we were very fortunate that we went out. Not only did we raise the money, we went out and recruited candidates.
Yeah.
And you, obviously, you and I met. I remember I had breakfast one morning.
At McDonald's and Glencoe.
Yeah, and so glad that you ran. And we put together, we had enough money. We were outspent probably in every race, but we had enough money. And if you have a good candidate and reasonable amount of money, you can make things happen. And that night of that 2010, we not only took control, we took a supermajority in both the House and the Senate.
You remember Blaine Gallagher, who served in the House?
I do.
Blaine was the senior representative here in this district where my studio is now. And I remember Blaine calling me on election night. You know, and I'm new enough to where I don't even know how to get to the state house. I don't even know where the parking lot is. But Blaine called me on election night, congratulated me, and he said, "You're not going to believe this. It's a supermajority." I don't think I even understood what a supermajority was at that point, but I soon learned that meant that we could actually get things done. We didn't have to have even Democrats working across the aisle. We could just get it done ourselves if we wanted to.
I remember a call I got that same night. It was pretty interesting. I was very confident. I mean, I felt so good about what we had done in the strategic plan of all of it. And I was convinced we were just going to have a huge night. Mike wasn't as convinced. Mike thought we could win control. I don't think Mike was thinking supermajority. But I remember during the night getting a call from then Governor Riley.
Yeah.
And he was beside himself. He kept saying, "Dale, I think y'all are going to win." So I said, "Governor, we're going to win 21 plus seats." And I think I was the only one to truly believe that. But in the Senate, but we did.
But we have 22 that night?
Yeah, 22. Yeah. And it was, we had cases where we spent $100,000 and the other side spent $1.1 million.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it just, we were totally outspent. But there again, we had a good, consistent plan. We had a great message. We had good candidates. And we took a supermajority.
Well, we did. And, you know, I've said on this show several times, this year, the election cycle that we're in right now, this year feels to me, on a broad scale, a little like what 2010 felt. Because 2010, not only did you and Mike and others around you gather around a plan, y'all called it the handshake with Alabama, you had an agenda of things you wanted to do, you had a determination to become a supermajority, but we also had the Tea Party movement, we had a groundswell against the Obama administration, we had a national sentiment that's helped create the wave. This year, to me, feels a little bit like that because we're seeing so much of a groundswell of sentiment. Now, Alabama's a red state. It will stay a red state. But elsewhere in the nation, I'm hoping they're seeing a little bit of what we saw in 2010.
I hope you're correct. Now, there's going to be a difference. Here's what you've got to remember, and I remember making this statement. In 2010, you've suddenly had the Republicans taking control after 136 years.
Yeah.
So, and to do that, it meant we had to bring a huge amount of new faces who were eager to come in, learn about government, and do the right thing. I remember telling one of my colleagues, what we have tonight or what we will have in this quadrennium is the purest it's going to get, in that we were pure in terms of true Republicans in a mass group that were ready to work with leadership and pass big legislation, and we're able to do that. my worry on the national level is you may have a – I think the Republicans are going to have a good year, but you're still going to have a lot of Republicans who have already been there.
Yeah.
And the question is, can they, after that election, take these new individuals, whoever they are, and really put together a contract for America or whatever and move us forward?
Well, I think that's going to be key because right now – we are seeing, and later in the show, you'll be gone at this point. But I've got a whole segment built on where's the plan, and I've been doing a little bit of that, talking about our handshake with Alabama in the past. I've talked about that on the show. The contract with America was huge in '94, and right now, even Republican mega donors are telling McConnell they don't see a plan, and they want to know what they're giving money to besides just good ideas. All right, well, tell you what, Boomer, go ahead and move us to a break, brother. We'll do that right now, folks. We are with State Senator Del Marsh. Who is leaving the state Senate after six amazing terms, was one of the architects of the Republican takeover in 2010. And we're going to come back and talk to him about a little bit of post-politics and education, which he has been the advocate for school choice in the state Senate now for a number of years. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Man, I'm talking about we are south of Birmingham, north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, over to Gadsden, spanning all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right. Glad to be back in studio right now with State Senator Del Marsh. And, Del, I want to thank you, by the way, because you stood by me in both my elections. The teachers union threw everything they could, plus the kitchen sink, trying to not allow me to be elected. You actually came and campaigned with me and for me. On behalf of the Williams family, thank you very much for that.
Well, and Phil, obviously, thank you for serving the great state of Alabama. I mean, people like you in the legislature, I'm just telling you, even with the Republican-controlled legislature, are rare. I mean, you are the true conservative, and we just don't have enough of them.
Well, I appreciate that. But, let's get back to our discussions real briefly. You went from being pretty much the head of the minority, doing what you could, but, you know, at some point they didn't need your vote. They could either take it or leave it, right? And there were times when, and I saw it, there's times when it's a bill that's non-controversial and both sides can get together. There's times when it's controversial and maybe a few will get together. But there are times when you just couldn't get something done because you're in the minority, and then you switched, bam, overnight, because a lot of folks don't realize on the state legislative races, you take office the night of the election.
That's
like,
right.
Poof, instant senator. But you were instant in the majority and soon after elected pro tem. What was it like walking in the state house the first time you were in the majority?
Well, I think it was really interesting. A lot of the people in the state house were kind of nervous because it really was a huge change. Had a lot of people been there for years. I was talking to bureaucrats and such.
Yeah.
So we all came in. And, it was interesting, and I will say this. You've heard me say this, Phil. I had a saying, and I remember this when I went into power, and because we had a supermajority, and that is true strength is the ability to be fair when you have total control.
Wow.
What I did not want to happen is to come in with a hard hand. I mean, I'm a believer, and I'm going to work like hell to win an election.
Yeah.
But when the election is over, I want to move forward with in this case, a conservative agenda, but also work with my colleagues, all of them, across the board, including the Democrats. So it's going to be a Republican agenda. Then they're going to get your way.
Yeah.
But there's a way to do that and be civil with people. Because I can tell you, being in the minority for three terms, there were times I don't think we were treated very properly on the floor.
No.
Okay?
And much like the fist fight, the infamous fist fight on the floor with Lowell Barron.
That's right.
So not with you, but somebody else.
No. So my goal was to do that, and we did that. We came in. We were moving really good, strong, conservative agenda. At the same time, we were fair with the colleagues on the other side. And I was very, very proud of that. My job was obviously to keep the trains running. And I think we did that. There was some learning pain early on, but I thought we did a pretty good job, and and I was enjoyed working with my colleagues.
You know, some of the things that we accomplished, too, have sort of faded in memory also, in my opinion. Like for instance, there's been no proration of the state budget since we took office. There's been, I say we, I'm not there anymore, but there's been the establishment of reserve accounts, so you actually have something extra in case you have a bad year. There's been, well, we downsized government. We streamlined, and we actually consolidated departments. There was a whole lot of stuff that just never would have happened.
Phil, you are so correct. I don't think people understand. You hear Republicans talk all the time about fiscal responsibility. We truly went in and passed legislation that, in essence, we have never been in proration since Republicans have been in control. During COVID, Alabama is one of the top states in the country that moved through the COVID without a financial problem. I mean, it's because of good, sound fiscal policy. Our government, when Republicans took over today, our government is actually, I believe, 14% smaller.
Yeah. Well, and I remember, though, it was amazing, even the little anecdotal stories. When you took over as pro tem, you found excess employees sitting inside offices nobody even knew were there. And mostly by natural attrition, we began to let some of those kind of go away.
There were 44 employees at the pro tem's office when I came in, and I ended up with four.
Yeah. Well, that's as it should be. I still remember you talking about how you went across the street because there was an extra office, like an adjunct office in the Capitol. You went over there, and you finally apologized to these two little ladies who were sitting there, like little ladies with, you know, hairs in a bun and wearing tennis shoes and UW pencils. And you finally said, I'm so sorry to keep walking through your office. And they said, that's okay. We work for you. And you said, well, who are you? You found checks in drawers that hadn't been cashed. I mean, it was craziness.
Yeah, it really was. And I think you got to practice what you preach. You know, the pro tem gets a state trooper as a driver.
Yeah.
One of the things I did when I came in, I didn't take the driver. I said, it's more important to me that trooper being on the road protecting the citizens of Alabama. So I didn't see the need in it. So I think you've got to practice what you preach, and I think we did that.
Well, I would agree. And while I wish there were some things that had happened differently or some things that had happened that didn't, you know, that there are times when the individual's agendas, you know, didn't always get accomplished. But for the most part, the handshake with Alabama, I think we hit every single point on that agenda in the first 4 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
we even cut our own pay.
Absolutely.
In fact, if I recall, for a while there, you and I and Brian Taylor were the only three, even on our own caucus, who refused to take the full pay we were allowed to because the Democrats had given themselves a huge pay raise and we weren't going to take it.
That is correct. And, of course, you know, that is one of the things that I believe, when we talk about timing, there was a lot of anger in the state over the pay raise that had been Democrats had pushed through.
Well, Boomer, how are we doing on time? We got time. How much time are we got before the break? Listen, Dale, we're going to come back here in a minute. For the last... gosh, as long as I've known you anyway, you have been a huge advocate for reforming Alabama's education system. We're ranked one of the last in the nation. The numbers don't ever seem to climb up, and yet we spend more every year on education. It's not about where we spend it. It's about how we spend it. And you've been the lead advocate in the Alabama State Senate for school choice. People often refer to it in the lump sum of school choice. One of my favorite nights in the 8 years I was there with you was passing the Alabama Accountability Act. I can still remember, I was leaning on the wall next to Pat Harris, the Secretary of the Senate, and you were at the microphone. The only time I ever saw you raising your voice, and I'm behind you yelling, "Get him, Dale!" And we passed that bill. We'll talk about it when we get back, all right? All right, folks, Phil Williams in studio with State Senator Dale Marsh, former pro tem of the State Senate, architect of the 2010 takeover, and a school choice advocate. Right Side Radio, we will be right back.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. So, listen, we're back in studio with State Senator Del Marsh. So, Del, I don't know what you're going to do post-politics. I hope you're not going to fade away. One of the things you've been such an advocate for that we talk about a lot on this show is school choice. One of my favorite nights, I said it right before the break, one of my favorite nights in the Alabama State Senate, you had told me like several weeks prior, we were at a dinner one night, and I said, yeah, but this and education, that, and you said, Phil, and you kind of looked around, and you goes, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to drop a dadgum sub on top of that education bill, and we're going to get school choice in Alabama. And there was a very close-knit circle. You had a pretty tight group that worked on that, but the Alabama Accountability Act, we passed it that night. And it rocked some people's world. It was the first foray into school choice we'd ever had. How did you get, by the way, tell me this, how did you get that thing planned? Because almost everything had to have the AEA stamp of approval back in the day.
Well, you know, you're right. It, and I hate to say it, but it's almost like it was the best kept secret in Montgomery. But,
yeah,
you know, I talked with every individual senator. And basically the basic question at times, if you remember, even then we were having education issues. I said, if you have a continued failing school, do you believe a parent should have the right to move their child? And every one of them, the answer was yes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what got the conversation going. So I knew through that question and what I was going to do in terms of school choice, the answer across the board was yes. So then I went, at the time, we were fortunate, Mike was in Hubbard in the House, and Mike was a very strong speaker. And Mike basically did the same thing. He brought small groups in, talked to them. And so we basically went into a conference committee, and we offered the sub at a conference committee on an education bill that brought the Accountability Act into play. And it all happened in a matter of hours in the evening, and the governor signed it that very next morning. And lo and behold, we had our first taste of school choice.
Yeah, this particular bill – it allows families, because here's the thing, philosophically speaking, do you believe that the money is there for the system or to educate the child? And if you believe it's there to educate the child, then why do you trap them into a failing school? And so this is the first bill we did that literally says, if you're in a failing school, mom and dad, you can make a choice. And there's a tax credit. If companies, persons, whoever, individuals, if they want to contribute to these scholarship-granting organizations, they get a one-for-one tax credit. Am I right in saying that? One-for-one?
You're correct.
And it only takes, out of a multi-billion dollar education budget, we have, what, a $30 million?
Less than 1%.
Yeah, it's a minuscule amount by comparison to the overall budget process. But it allows these scholarship-granting organizations then to give a scholarship to someone to move their child away from a failing school into a public or private situation that's better for them.
That's right. It's a first taste, I call it, of parents' choice. And let me expand on that, Phil, because I know you're a believer in school choice. And here's one thing. I'm a business guy. You're a business guy. And I posed this question to the Business Council of Alabama in a recent meeting down there. I said, how many of you believe in the free market? And everybody's hand went up. Oh, I believe. I said, well, that should apply to education as well.
Absolutely.
I said, because we have a case. I mean, here's the facts. In Alabama today, we're 46th in reading and 50th in mathematics. And I will tell your listeners, they need to check, because we've got this A through F grade in schools. And you may think, oh, our school's great. It's got a B or an A or a C. You need to look at the fine print. Because to me, there are different components that make up that score. To me, the most important component is student performance. How are our students compared to other students, not only across the state, but across this country?
That's the product.
That's it. That's the product. That's the end of the day. So I believe at this point, and I would ask your listeners to call their legislators and say, well, you have got to give parents more choice. We have got to have a free market in education, that the money should follow the student, that parents should be able to decide what's best for their child to get the best education possible, because we as a state are failing our children if we don't start producing more choice for these families.
Well, totally agree. You didn't stop there. Now, we've modified the Accountability Act a couple of times. We raised the cap. Where's the cap right now? 30 million?
35 million.
We've got charter schools now, which is really a public school that's allowed to do things under a different charter and be innovative and do some creative things. I think we got 15 charter schools right now across the state. We've had Representative Charlotte Meadows here on this studio or in this show several times. But then you even last year, you were going down the Arizona model, which Arizona just signed into effect the most leading, I've got a piece right here, Heritage Foundation, brand new out today. Arizona shows the nation what education freedom looks like. And you had the Parents' Choice Act and couldn't even get it out of committee, which is just bothers me.
Phil, it bothers me. I mean, and I will tell you this. I look at my one failure in the legislature was not able to bring true Parents' Choice to the people of this state. And we have I will argue that Alabama, on paper, it should be one of the most conservative states and probably is one of the most conservative states in the country. And it's easy, and I can't believe that the parents don't care. I refuse to believe that.
Yeah.
But we have been last too long, and it is time for us to open this up for choice for parents and to have a Republican-controlled state legislature. It is criminal, in my opinion, that they don't make it a priority to give the parents a choice. And the only reason it doesn't happen, and I'm sorry, I love my colleagues, but the only reason it's not happening is because of the influence of the Alabama Education Association and the pressure they put, and it should not be happening. We should be I will even take it a step further. Teachers that are listening, you will be better off in a free market system. Teachers will end up at the end of the day making more money in the free market than where they are today under union control.
Well, not only that, but the free market, the competition that comes from the free market, you play up to your competition. And if you're losing students to something better down the road, then you know you have to up your game where you are. It creates that innovation. It creates that drive to excel that you don't have when you have an apathetic, no need to change. And the story that I've got here, the piece from Newsweek that actually is written by the Heritage Foundation, they literally said that the studies are now showing that Arizona's new law, which is being violently opposed by the teachers union, that it is driving up the public school system's numbers. And the NAEP, which is how we get ranked 50th in the nation, the NAEP, their numbers are climbing because statistically they're finding that the competition is driving the public schools to have to do a better job.
I'm a believer in competition. I mean, you are too. It's healthy.
I've been a businessman.
It's healthy.
It's more than healthy. It's necessary.
Well, we need a free market in education, and the citizens of this state need to call your legislators and put pressure on them.
Daggum, Dale, you going to be an activist when you leave politics? I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I remember, and you mentioned it too, and we don't have to beat up on them too much, but I think that one of the worst organizations in this state in terms of influencing its politics has been the AEA. And I remember one time, and this is just me, you didn't dismiss me. I called you. I drove over to Anniston. We met at Dad's Barbecue up there on the hill, just up from the Reserve Center, and we sat down to lunch, and I've been scheming. And I said, Dell, I've got a 12-point plan to mitigate the influence of the AEA. Well, you'd already thought of all this. It wasn't like Phil, the new guy, had all the plans, but that's just the way I think. But daggum, pretty much all of them we did. But since then, they have been reclimbing an influence. And Republicans have begun taking money for their campaigns from the AEA, which we used to say we would never do. Yeah. And that concerns me when I hear it.
Well, it concerns me as well. But at the end of the day, I go back. We are a Republican state.
Yeah.
And Republicans, one of the, you know, fiscal responsibility, choice, which education is the area. And everybody better understand this. It affects so many things. A high percentage of your prison population don't have a high school education. There's a correlation there.
Yeah.
You've got bad health habits. If you look at the health care in this state, or I'll even push it to the obesity issues of the state. That's education related.
Yeah.
And so not only are you economic development, well, who's going to come to the state of Alabama? What is the perception of those out there in the big business world? If they perceive Alabama doesn't care about education, why would they locate a facility here?
Absolutely.
We've got to correct this problem.
It drives a lot of indicators. And I would you know, I haven't seen the study, but I would hazard that while it is possible to succeed in life without a college degree, because white-collar degrees don't mean everything in terms of, you know, post-high school life, I would say that very rarely will you find someone who is successful without at least a high school diploma. And that high school diploma then has to mean something too.
Yeah. And well, without a good base education, many of those young people are going to have remedial courses in college at that expense. I mean, they're not prepared for college.
Well, Dell, let me ask you this. You're leaving. You're not alone, by the way. There are some members of the Alabama House and Senate who are pro-school choice. We've had several on this show. I can think of some that I served with that are still there now. But who, in your opinion, is going to wind up taking up the mantle of being the advocate in the Senate once you're gone for school choice?
Phil, I hate to say it. I don't know.
Well,
I hate to say that. I really do. I would. It needs to be somebody in leadership. I will say this. Senator Orr has come through with some pieces, such as the dealing with mathematics, trying to get people into that curriculum and teaching mathematics, trying to make improvements in pieces of improvements in education. But I still stand by this is at a level. It is so critical that it has to be bigger than that. It has to be parents' choice.
It does. I agree with that completely. Well, Dell, I think we're about out of time, but I want to just thank you in front of all the listeners here for your dedication to the state of Alabama, the time you served. I hope you and Ginger enjoy post-politics, but I also hope that we're not going to hear the last of you and that you'll somehow be in the mix somewhere along the way.
I promise we'll be in touch, Phil. Right. It's been my pleasure to be here today.
Good enough. All right, folks, you've been with State Senator Dell Marsh. Been the pro tem of the state Senate for a number of years, been in the legislature, choosing to go ahead and just not run for re-election because, that's term limits. But nonetheless, has been the advocate for school choice, perhaps in the entire legislature, and has been effective at doing it. And there's still more to come. We got to do more, folks. We need more champions of education out there and champions, for that matter, just of conservative politics. All right, Boomer, take us to a break, brother. We'll do it. Folks, we'll come right back. Moving forward in the show, next in the Triple Dipper. All right, Phil Williams. Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back.